Joy. Joy. Joy is. How would you complete that sentence? Joy is. Take a moment to think. Joy is. Why don't you tell the person nearest to you? Joy is. Poet David White says, joy is affection, skin touching skin, singing in the car, music in the kitchen, and that quiet, irreplaceable, and companionable presence of a friend. Joy. Mary Oliver says, joy is not made to be a crumb. I think it's meant to be the whole loaf. Poet John O'Donohue likens joy to a sea coming home to the shore, or the feeling of laughter rinsing through your soul. Joy. I think of joy when I think of this desert in Namibia, bordering on South Africa, called Namaqualand. 10 months of the year, the desert is cracked and dry and scorching hot. Yet every year, at exactly the same time in late September, following the spring rains, these tiny seeds burrow into the once cracked earth, and there's this carpet of daisies that begin to grow. On our website, I've put a picture of a before and after, a photo taken in August and one taken in October, the exact same scene. Red, purple, orange, magenta, bright yellow, and white for 8 weeks of the year. And then the sun gets too hot and it dies. It's a picture for me of fleeting joy, that surprise of joy, of God creating something quite unexpected in the least likely place. These words and pictures are also those contained in Psalm 126, and it tells a story about the nation of Israel's joy. It is a psalm of ascent, a psalm that was prayed or sung during the community's pilgrimage to Jerusalem for their festivals. And right in the middle of the psalm, in the center of the psalm, there is a focal point. Some psalms have what's called a chiastic structure. It points to the very middle, and it's at the bottom of verse 3. And the Hebrew reads, Hayinu Semechim. We are becoming joy. We are becoming joy. A people of joy. An identity. A way of being. And it is in the present tense. We are becoming a people of joy. The words preceding this are all in the past tense, as they looked back at memories of times gone by, especially of the exile, the story that I tried to tell with chains and peoples whose necks turned the wrong way with the children. And the words are, when we returned, when Yahweh brought us back, then we laughed, then the nation said of us, wow. But it's in the past. And joy cannot be experienced from the past. We can remember times of joy. We can recollect and re-experience and renew our memories and feel joy. But it's not a past emotion. It is in the present. And after this phrase, Hayinu Semechim, it moves towards the future. From the past to the present, into the future, prayers prayed in anticipation with hope, allowing the joy of the past to open us up to the possibility of joy in our present. Because, friends, joy cannot be manufactured. We cannot make joy happen. What we can do is facilitate the conditions for the possibility of joy. We can open up. How do we open up? We open up, Brené Brown says, by working against cynicism. Cynicism is self-protection. Cynicism is fear. Cynicism is when we worry about being perceived as caring too much, being too eager, buying in too much, afraid of disappointment or looking like the fool. Cynicism stops our joy. Opening up to joy is daring to be wholehearted again. For that's how we were in the past, wholehearted. And it is perhaps trying something new. Opening up to joy is also about sharing and receiving from each other. Joy is meant to be shared. It is actually the practice of generosity. It bubbles up from us, and then it is cultivated in community, and it can be contagious if we let it. Joy is shared laughter. Joy is present delight. So we can open up and facilitate the conditions for the possibility of joy. And we need to be mindful of this. Though joy cannot be created by us, joy can certainly be destroyed by us. It's that moment when a young child walks into the room with a painting of a tree, eyes sparkling, bubbling with excitement to show someone. And one by one, the adults comment, "Why didn't you wear an apron? Look at your shirt." Or, "What's that? You can do better. I can't even see the leaves." Or, "Trees have green leaves, not purple leaves, silly." Joy can be destroyed. And my friends, it's not only what we do to children. We do it to each other as well. Joy can be destroyed. And we destroy joy by over control, when we don't leave room for surprise. Words like, "This is the way it is always done here," or, "That's never going to work, we've tried it before." We destroy joy through demands of 100% perfection, an all or nothing attitude, not celebrating well-meaning attempts. This doesn't mean we can't give feedback, but let's check our expectations on each other and build a culture of encouragement that opens us up to the possibility of joy. Joy is destroyed by constant criticism that undercuts someone's contribution. Didn't you hear it in the words of Judas? The fragrance of Mary's perfume filled the room for everyone's enjoyment. And he criticized. That's why we have in the word in our dictionary, kill joy. It's a word that actually was first recorded in 1776. And it came from somebody saying, "You kill everyone else's joy." Kill joy. You know, when everyone's enjoying their meal at a restaurant and the one person keeps complaining about the terrible service. Kill joy. Now, some of us have come to this negative, critical attitude honestly. And it reminded me of a scene that I reread the last couple of weeks, the book, second book of the Lord of the Rings. And we had these three riders on horses, and they're searching for their little hobbit friends who have gone missing. And they've been riding for days, and they are relying on the kindness of people in the communities to help them on their way. And they reach a certain point after days and days of searching, and suddenly they are surrounded by this small army who draw their swords. And the riders start a conversation. And in the middle of the conversation, the leader of the army with their drawn swords says this: "There is trouble now on all our borders, and we are threatened. We desire only to be free. We welcomed guests kindly and with joy in the better days, but in these times, the stranger finds us swift and hard." When we feel threatened, when there is trouble on our borders, it is easy to lose joy. St. Catharines, you have been on quite the journey. There were the glory days. Sunday school overflowing, pews full all the way to the back row. Families, baptism, weddings, we remember the joy. When God did this for us, we were like people who dreamed. Then our mouths were filled with laughter. And the Edgemont neighbors said of us, "Now there's a faith community who trusts in God." But what of now? Who are we now? What is our present identity? And what are we praying for our future? Are we open to possibility? Even if the idea that brings joy comes in a new way, like a dream. So when someone expresses an idea with joy, let us say, "Let me hear more," and not, "We tried that before." And when someone tries something new or different, let us say, "How did it go? Can I help?" And not, "That's not going to work. I already see the mistake." I challenge you, as we come out of this Lenten season, to dare to open up to possibility, to dare to experiment and to encourage one another as we try things, to let each other try and try and try again, to have the courage to put down our suspicion of joy. For joy is evidence of the Spirit. It is fruit. It is visible outgrowth of a life of faith. Let us consider the following Chinese proverb as I end. "If I keep a green bow in my heart, the singing bird will come." Perhaps, joy is who we are becoming. Poet David White says, "Joy is affection, skin touching skin, singing in the car, music in the kitchen, and that quiet, irreplaceable, and companionable